All right, this is fine. This will work. I don't know. It's the worst goddamn podcast I've ever listened to.
I love this podcast.
We're off to a good start, I think.
Jesus. I'm going to leave this part in.
Please don't. Because I'm going to listen to this on my drive to work at some point this week, and I don't want to hear my inability to count to three on time.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime, and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These.
With the sixth pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Stephen Curry from Davidson College.
We're surrounded by the fucking wolves.
All rise, and welcome back inside the hallowed halls of basketball court, the only court in the country where the only topic all the time is basketball. There are many basketball courts in this country, but there's only one basketball court. The emphasis is what really makes that sentence. I'm Drudge Peter Andrews. Welcome inside the podcast, and I'm joined as always by our counsel. Joining me live here in California.
This time in person.
In person is Miles Johnson. Miles, how are you?
I'm just glad the basketball court is back.
I am too. It's been too long.
Yeah, I'm probably the only black person that's excited for court every time.
Good. Good start.
It's okay. You can laugh. That's fine.
And we're joined remotely, as always, by Sam Tidings. Sam, how are you doing?
Great. Happy to be here. I also love court.
I mean,
how do I follow that up?
I was going to say, I actually do love court, but that's like a whole different... In the 8 months since we've done this podcast, I've actually done a trial in court, so now I'm extremely qualified to be the judge.
What was that like? Was it, or how similar to this is it?
Hey, it's exactly the same.
It's the same.
It's like, it's 100%. It's like just sitting around the table. I can curse as much as I want, there's not like a scary judge staring at you the whole time. So, but enough about me. Let's talk about basketball. Our topic. So first, also we should address this. We've been gone for 8 months. It's our last episode of last year was in April, and now it's 2018. So
a lot has happened.
A lot has happened
since April of 2017. I think in all seriousness, we should say, or I can say that I don't know. Shit gets rough. The year gets hard. But I think we're gonna try to do this more frequently. Probably isn't the right word. What is
regularly?
Regularly.
Consistently,
with some type of plan in mind. There's a schedule exists, a Google spreadsheet exists, believe it or not. So I think we're going to try to do this more regularly. If for no other reason, it's really fun to do.
I'm looking forward to the month of February when I have to wake up at midnight anyway. So we just record a podcast before I wake up and work a 14-hour shift at the Olympics.
Yeah, you can wake up at 11, and we'll meet here at 8, and then you can go to the Olympics, and we'll just go
five
sleep.
Beats a day for 3 summers.
Yeah, and you guys can watch figure skating with me at 3 in the morning my time.
So wait, how big is the time gap? I actually don't know this. How big
14 hours.
14 hours. So nothing's going to be live this year.
No, it's all going to be live, and then it's all going to be replayed in prime time. Be sure to watch the Olympics on the NBC family of networks this February, especially if you like curling.
I do actually like curling.
I do
it's
like
great.
Curling, too.
It's great.
You know there's a place in Oakland you can go curling?
I don't even know how to curl, though. Like, I know how to skate.
Either.
I know how to skate.
You don't have to skate. You don't have to skate.
Yeah, you just push.
It's mostly sweeping.
Okay, but how do you stay on the ice unless you have skates?
You have
like weird shoes.
Sneakers.
So it's like bowling shoes for the ice, and then you have a broom. I could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I as I understand it, Canadians basically use them as an excuse to drink beer, so it can't be that hard. Speaking of excuses to drink beer, let's talk about this week's episode of Basketball Court. We have, as usual, a musical interlude to introduce you to the topic.
Big cooking Curry with Chef Curry. Curry shaking up on the play. He's had Chef Curry ankle with injuries throughout his career. Chef Curry with Thompson big slips big Chef Curry with and throws up a brick. He's hurt. He's Chef really Curry hurt. He's had two surgeries on his right ankle, Curry. And his left ankle was hurting him for the Denver series.
This should be the This should be the, what's the Drake song where he's Steph Curry with the shot?
That's what it was. Did you do you even listen to my handiwork?
No, I literally got the email in the car and I walked upstairs. Is that what it is?
It's that over announcer being like, oh no, Steph Curry hurt his ankles again.
All right, we're going to leave this in the show. So this week's episode, of course, is about Steph Curry, Wardell Stephen Curry, who was drafted by the Warriors, of course, as we all know, because the Warriors are unstoppable. And one of the teams that passed on him was the Minnesota Timberwolves, who instead drafted the legendary Johnny Flynn. In this week's episode, what it presupposes is, what if they didn't? What if instead the Warriors didn't have a chance to draft Steph because the Minnesota Timberwolves had already grabbed him up? Let's go through it, keeping things brisk as always, starting with Sam Tidings. What would have happened?
Thank you, Your Honor. I love
hearing that again.
I'm really excited for this episode because it's going to combine my favorite parts of every basketball court episode, which are drinking precisely one beer, the Thunder winning many titles, and the Warriors dynasty never being born. So we're going to start off with the Warriors not getting Steph Curry, which is extremely good for basketball as a whole, which I'll get to later. He goes to the Timberwolves, who also drafted Ricky Rubio that year. He joins a team with Kevin Love, who you might have heard of. No. But we're just going to fast forward very quickly to year three of this relationship, which would be the first year that Ricky Rubio comes over. And is also, Steph's third year was the year that the ankle injuries really started to get to him. I think he only played like 25 games that year after playing in like 70 and 80 the previous two seasons. So Kevin Love's already signed to an extension. And Ricky Rubio comes over, had a pretty good rookie year. I think he averaged 10 points and around 10 assists. So he's really the point guard of the future. And Steph is, you know, sort of already the old hat on his way out. It's very obvious that him and the Timberwolves aren't really a fit for each other, since David Kahn and Kurt Rambis, the head coach, are more old school basketball guys who see him more as a shooting guard, even though he's very small. So Steph, I mean, his dad already didn't want him drafted by the Timberwolves in the first place. He has no real loyalty to the land of a thousand lakes.
We should really try to get away from the topic of overbearing dads. I can't take it anymore right now.
You having problems at home, buddy?
Oh, I thought that was an obvious LeVar Ball joke.
I got the joke. So after year three, Steph is eligible for an extension. It is the summer of 2012, a wonderful summer. I'm going into my senior year of college. Everything is generally good in the world. The Thunder are coming off a finals appearance where they lose to the Miami Heat. They're also having some trouble locking down an extension for their class of 2009 draft pick. And so if you're picking up what I'm putting down, there's a deal to be found here.
And it shockingly involves the Thunder getting a much better deal than they actually got in real life.
No, it was a fair deal in real life, and it's a fair deal now. Because the Thunder are going to trade James Harden to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they're going to get back Steph Curry and two first-round picks.
Wait, okay, so hold on. Let me just pause for a second, and we're going to just... You're saying that in fiction, Steph,
yes,
Curry is worth the same amount as Kevin Martin, Jeremy Lamb, and a second.
Well, you have to remember, Steph at the time, he's about to sign in real life a four-year, $40 million extension. Very below-market extension for what he's actually going to put up in real life. And Harden at the time was holding out for a max extension, which he would get when the Thunder traded into the Rockets. So this is really more of a salary relief thing for Oklahoma City. I mean, they get the draft picks. They don't get Jeremy Lamb, which breaks my heart personally. But they do get essentially what Harden was for them, who is someone who at the time was known for his ability to score, couldn't really defend. I mean, Harden was really coming off of a high. He won Sixth Man of the Year that season, really carried the Thunder in the Western Conference playoffs. Curry was at the absolute lowest that his value has been in his career. And so it makes sense that the Thunder would want something more than just Curry back. if they're going to trade, you know, their future superstar James Harden to a division rival.
Okay, so let's say that checks out. I don't know if I buy it. What is the consequence of this this new reshuffling of power in the Western Conference?
So now we have a Wolves team that is Rubio at the point, James Harden at shooting guard, Kevin Love at the four, and an Oklahoma City team with Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, Nick Collison, all the future Hall of Famers that would end up letting me down in real life.
That sounds like a pretty good team.
It is a pretty good team, and it's crazy that the Thunder always end up with pretty good teams in basketball court. I don't know why that is.
So
let's just get to the winners and the losers, the part of the the story that we all love. Winners are the Thunder, obviously, because nothing can really go wrong for them here. Because either Steph just becomes a very good spot-up shooter, which he is in real life, and benefits from the drive-and-kick abilities of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in Scott Brooks' revolutionary isolation offense. Or Curry just becomes an isolation legend himself. I mean, if you remember, the Thunder's offense at that point was pretty much give the ball to Russ or give the ball to Kevin Durant and sort of get out of the way. Now imagine that they can do that with also Steph Curry, who becomes quite the isolation scorer himself when he's not being guarded by Kevin Love at the end of the finals. Because if you remember, at the end of the finals when they needed a three-pointer and Kevin Love stopped Steph Curry from hitting the game-tying three-pointer.
I mean, that was a great moment, and I'm disappointed that this timeline takes that moment away. So
it does. I'm sorry about that. Other winners, Scott Brooks, head coach of the Thunder at the time, probably wins a ring or two, at least, if we're being honest, with a team of KD, Russ, and Steph under contract, and Steph under such a below-market contract that the Thunder aren't giving these sort of weird contracts out to, like, Dion Waiters and the like in the in-between period. So Scott Brooks not only keeps his job because he has at least one ring at this point, he also does not have to coach the Wizards, who are trash.
Well, I resent that.
That seems like a deliberate provocation toward Miles. So let's also just... This is yet more evidence that the overarching hypothesis of basketball court is that the only timeline in which the Thunder do not win a championship
is real life. Yes,
is the current one, right?
Yes, that's important.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're consistent in the fiction.
Other actual winners: Mark Jackson does not have the high expectations of a team with a flourishing Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, David Lee, etc., and so he's sort of able to skate by with a Klay Thompson, Monte Ellis, Harrison Barnes, David Lee team to sort of be a consistent 6-8 seed and not really have to deal with the high expectations that got him fired in real life. The Knicks are a winner, inexplicably. This is also the basketball court's the only timeline where the Knicks are winners. Also, Steve Kerr still wants to come back into coaching when he does. If you remember in real life, he was very interested in going to the Knicks before he got that mega offer from the Warriors, who are a better team and a better franchise. But the Warriors aren't around because they're, for some reason, happy with Mark Jackson. So the Knicks get Steve Kerr. They probably suck less than they do in real life. So I'm going to consider them winners.
So I do want to stop here because I have two separate questions.
Go ahead.
Which is, if the Knicks get Steve Kerr, do they still get Porzingis? And two, if Steve Kerr is coaching the Knicks and Mark Jackson is coaching the Warriors, who is the third man in the finals booth?
Very excellent question.
Well, see, I'm going to take personal offense to that question because I don't think it would be a man at all, Peter. I think it would be Doris Burke.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it wouldn't be.
I was going to say, I would love that, but were we really ready for a woman in 2014 to talk about basketball on TV?
No, but speaking of women rising to power, there's more in this timeline down the road.
I really hope Oprah's president in this one.
Oh, it gets better. Other winners, the Wolves, because they have Harden, Rubio, and Love. They don't have to trade Love and end up with this team where, I mean, now it's fine, but you look at the 5 years between the current Thibodeau, Jimmy Butler team with Towns and the David Kahn bringing back Darko teams and that ilk. Definitely a better situation for the Wolves. American sneaker consumers are winners, because we don't get those terrible Steph Curry dad shoes that he tried to introduce during the finals a couple years ago, because he's already on a team with two guys who have much bigger sneaker deals. He also probably doesn't become unanimous MVP Steph Curry if he's surrounded by and splitting votes with Durant and Westbrook. So there's probably not really a demand for Steph Curry to get his own shoe line like he got.
That's undisputed good for the world.
Other winners, Sam Tidings is a winner in this timeline because not only are the Thunder insanely good, but the Warriors dynasty is never born. It's murdered in its crib. And
wait, can I ask? So, because it was my understanding that you are anti-Warriors because of the fact that they were good and locked the Thunder out. Would you have been anti-Warriors had they never like reached their prominence?
Probably not to the degree that I am now. No, but
there was always an underlying anti-Warriors bias.
I don't like other basketball teams for the most part. I just want my team to do well. There are other players I like, but like even when the Cavs won, I'm not like happy for like Dan Gilbert to raise the trophy. Like it was cool that LeBron like blocked that layup and stuff, but I'm not like happy for other teams because it just reminds me of how sad that it makes me when I think about my team. We're losing to the Blazers tonight. I cannot deal with this. Speaking of losers, the Warriors, obviously, because they're stuck with Mark Jackson, they don't get Steph or Steve Kerr. Draymond also probably never becomes Draymond because Steve Kerr was really the guy who unleashed him. He's sitting behind Bogut and Lee for a couple of years, probably gets traded because Mark Jackson really wasn't a Draymond fan. Which also, with Draymond never really rising to prominence and the Warriors not making the finals, a retroactive winner is LeBron's testicles.
I also think, you know, I think Draymond kind of comes out a winner in this too because obviously he doesn't become Draymond Green, good basketball player. But this also means that in the summer of 2016, he does not meet my friend Sean. Hi, Sean. Over breakfast. Sean subsequently puts a curse on Draymond that leads to the Warriors losing the finals, the testicular incident, the penis pick, the fighting thing he had that summer. That whole summer of Draymond would never have happened. So I think that's actually good for Draymond.
Fun fact, in Mark Jackson's last year, Harrison Barnes was getting an average of 7 more minutes a game than Draymond Green.
That checks out.
How great was Mark Jackson as a coach, guys?
Hand down, man down.
I will refrain from doing my Mark Jackson impression here.
You're another beer away.
Is your argument as...
No, there's still more stuff here,
there's
man.
Still more stuff.
Oh, yeah,
follow along.
Opposing counsel did not do the research.
We'll see about that.
Other losers, I'll try to get to this quickly. The Cavs, because they don't have Kevin Love. And so if everyone gets hurt, it's really hard to see them winning in 2015. Maybe, you know, if Durant gets hurt in real life with the foot injury, he might have missed those playoffs in the fake timeline. But the Thunder would have also had Steph Curry, who was pretty good in 2015. That was really his breakout season. So maybe the Thunder win anyway. I mean, they maybe get to the finals just because there's no Rockets in their way. There's no Warriors in their way. So who knows? Other losers, fans of memes. We don't get the Kevin Durant Players Tribune My Next Chapter meme where he's wearing the shirt of whatever team just won whatever sports championship. Love that one. Because he stays with the Thunder. We don't get an entire summer of the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead jokes. We don't.
Can I stop here and ask what everyone's favorite Warriors blew a 3-1 lead meme is, if one comes to mind?
Mine is the from the Mr. Bergstrom episode of The Simpsons, where the Mr. Bergstrom hands Lisa the note from the train, and Lisa opens up the note and it says the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. That's my personal favorite.
I don't know if I have a favorite, but one that comes to mind. I'm not even sure I have one that comes to mind, to be honest. That was so long ago.
The one that comes to mind for me is, it's like hidden meanings in sports logos, right? And so they got like the Expos one, a couple other ones. They show the Warriors one. It's got that basketball in the background. It's like the three lines in the back represent the three wins that they had in the finals. And the one line across the middle represents the 3-1 lead or something like that. Someone on Twitter did that one. Good job, Twitter guy.
Thank you, Twitter.
We're going to have to like retweet these memes so people understand what we're talking about.
That's what memes are for. They're for
from
retweeting.
2 years ago.
One last meme that we don't get in my timeline. Miles, this is something we discussed earlier. We don't get the Ayesha Curry rigged for money tweet from Game 6 of the 2016 Finals, which I would like to read for you all, if possible, right now.
Yeah, let's do it. Dramatically, please.
Now, this is, to set this up, this is... She's tweeting this from the bus as they're stuck behind Jay-Z and Beyonce trying to get into the stadium. And the entire team bus, the whole Warriors, can't get into the gym. This is Ayesha tweeting from the bus.
Wait, so the Warriors were playing in the finals.
And this is after that game where Steph fouled out and then got ejected and threw his mouth guard at a child.
Oh, yeah. That was hysterical, actually.
That was a great finals.
Okay, wait. Was he a child, right? Wasn't he, like, 17 or 18?
Legally.
He's a minor. Okay, here is Ayesha Curry. 10:37 p.m., June 16th, 2016. I've lost all respect. Sorry. This is absolutely rigged for money. ... Or ratings. I'm not sure which. I won't be silent. Just saw it live. Sorry. And then she followed up. She wasn't done. Tweeted in the heat of the moment because the call was uncalled for. She's not done. Police racial profiled my father and told him to remove credentials and tried to arrest him. It's been a long night for me. I apologize. And then finally, I'm okay that we lost. I just can't take people coming at my family for absolutely no reason. Something I don't understand or stand for.
I mean, most of us do not stand for people coming for our family for exactly no reason. But shout out to Ayesha for, you know.
That was a really good night for Twitter.
That was
the same night as they were trapped on the bus behind Beyonce.
That was good. let me just wrap up my section with some miscellaneous. Obviously, we don't get the Warriors' 73 win season. Realistically, with no Warriors or Rockets in the way, we get a lot of like Oklahoma City versus the Spurs as the West big rivalry.
You don't think this Warriors team is good enough to be the second banana in the West
with Mark Jackson as the coach?
I meant the Wolves. I meant we've made the Wolves good in this.
I think the Wolves are like top four, but I mean we've seen Harden in the playoffs. We haven't seen Ricky Rubio in the playoffs for a reason.
Well, you can't have much confidence that David Kahn would make the like surrounding moves required to put that team in the top.
I mean, here's another thing. We do not get the Splash Brothers nickname, which is unfortunate. We probably do get a really cool nickname for the triumvirate of like Steph, Russ, and KD.
And I've been trying to think about what it would be.
Especially
I still can't.
Once Steph blows up. But then like because KD is extremely lame, he's probably like, oh no, that's not cool. We're going to call ourselves, like, the three basketball buddies. And everyone's just like, okay, we're going to stop trying to come up with a nickname for you guys now. Because if you remember, in the actual real-life timeline, he turned down the nickname the Slim Reaper and demanded that people call him the Servant.
Which is the least intimidating nickname.
It's not a good one. It's not a great
nickname at all.
It's like, the Round Mound of Rebound, the Human Highlight Film, and the Servant.
I feel like at some point we're going to have to assemble a list of like what the worst or like aborted nicknames were, because the one I think of is like this summer, I would say Joel Embiid's sole misstep on the internet is when he tried to make the Sixers nickname the Feds, which was for Fultz, Embiid, Dario, and Simmons.
Still better than the Servant.
Yeah,
That's still better than that. You can pull off a whole black thing with that.
I think you can do, like, there's probably, like, 10 or 15, you know, we're all about clickbait here. You could probably come with a pretty good list of, like, these are the 10 stupidest nicknames in basketball history.
Whatever Laura Dern's for Baron Davis is right now, that's got to be one of them.
Oh, my God.
and then I want to cap off my brief with one very important point.
Yeah, we actually do want to touch on this for a second or two, because I have some questions.
I also am curious.
This is something that I earnestly believe. I think Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors on July 4th, 2016 set off a really bad chain of events. And so we're going to start with the Cubs winning the World Series, which was objectively bad. It was good that they were cursed and didn't win for 100 years, and their fans were sad. And then a week after that, Donald Trump is elected president. Very soon thereafter, you know, all the horrible Trump policies, the travel ban, you know, Gorsuch getting on the Supreme Court. And then the Patriots come back from a 25-point deficit in the Super Bowl. But what this argument presupposes is that Kevin Durant does not sign with the Warriors, and so none of those things happen. So the Cubs don't win the World Series. They, like, lose in the first round or something. Hillary is inspired by the Oklahoma City Thunder to visit the Midwest, and she gets the necessary electoral votes. The Falcons run the ball and kick a field goal, and they win, like, 31-20. And everything is decent. Like, obviously, there's still some problems with the world.
Okay, country, let's cut in here for a second. Miles, what is... Because I have a couple objections to this. Miles, what's your number one objection to this theory?
You know what? This is the first one that we've done of 2018. I'm not even going to come off necessarily super hostile with an absolute concrete objection. My only question is this... You kind of, like, mixed... You mixed like curse metaphors here, because you first say that him, you know, not signing with the Warriors just kind of cosmically means the Cubs won't win the World Series, but then you kind of go to a more concrete, like, oh, Hillary is inspired to visit the Mid. So is it? I'm just kind of lost. Is it KD, like, doesn't sign with the Warriors, and then some, like, invisible hand of the universe makes sure that these other things don't happen, or are there, like, is it more like the butterfly effect?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like, you know, in, like, superhero movies where, like, the bad guy spends the whole movie trying to, like, open up some sort of, like, mystery box in Times Square that's going
this,
to, like...
Is this Stranger Things 3?
Like, signal the aliens to, like, come kill all the humans, and, like, the superheroes have to stop him. So what I'm saying is that, like, Kevin Durant going to the Warriors and writing that Players Tribune piece is, like, you know, what if the bad guys had opened up the box and all the horrible things came out, and we're sort of living in that terrible, bad Marvel timeline. And the only
okay, so here's, thing... Here's,
nothing
here's,
to clarify
here's,
my question.
here's my objection, okay? So it totally checks out for me that the Cubs winning the World Series led to Donald Trump being elected president.
Yeah, like,
that
fair.
To me, yeah. Absolutely foolproof. Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
The Cubs were cursed for a reason, and once we undo the curse, that checks out. And it also checks out to me that Trump being president means that the Patriots were bound to make that comeback.
Right, those, like, two are hand in hand.
Like, so, that
so you've got
makes...
three of the three,
right,
three
yeah,
links
what
on
we're
the chain.
What we're confused about is what Kevin Durant,
like,
has
the
to
precipitating
do
event of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors, because it's not like
yeah,
there's
the more,
a curse
actually,
there.
Yeah, the more we talk about this, the three that you have here...
That makes total sense.
Yeah, those
that's what happened.
Together. But I don't get where Kevin Durant has anything to do with this.
Well, because think about what curse was lifted after Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors. The base god's curse. A base
I'm
god's
thinking.
Curse was
oh,
lifted.
Oh, damn, Sam's going to win this episode. God damn. Go ahead.
Lil B revoked the curse on Kevin Durant because he signed with his hometown team, the Golden State Warriors, leading to this chain of events.
That's good.
And the situation where we are now.
Yeah, that's good.
I rest my case.
This might be Sam's best performance that we've done so far.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things is that so in law school and in the law, generally, you lead with your strongest point first. There's not a lot of value in like a last minute reveal that's like, and ta-da, I have played my winning card. However, in this case, Sam did a very good job.
And in all the television shows. That
yeah. You familiar with a little program called Law and Order?
I've actually never seen a full episode of Law and Order.
Have you not for
Are you
no.
kidding me?
How is that not required for law school?
Because it doesn't make it's like nothing like it. Like, it's a made up show by TV people. Like,
so you're saying that you have not gain any wisdom from Ice-T about the
I mean,
law or how it works.
To be fair, this is
no,
a podcast about having a magical basketball time machine. So
that's
maybe
true.
You should invest some time in Law and Order, even though it's not the most realistic portrayal of your profession.
I'm still not convinced it's not the most realistic portrayal, but I'm not in law school, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, so that was a good job, Sam. Well done. And now let's talk Let's start to Miles. Miles, what do you got?
Yeah, so the good thing is that as great as Sam's ending was, the everything up until that didn't make any sense. So I think we should still be okay here. This, like him, though, I still assume that in 2009 draft, Minnesota takes Rubio at number 5 and Steph instead of Johnny Flynn at number 6. I think we have enough written about this to know that, one, Steph and his camp didn't want to go to Minnesota. Minnesota knew that. David Kahn, according to David Kahn, this is the first time he had ever had any experience with someone not wanting to be drafted to go to Minnesota with someone not wanting to play in Minnesota. I don't believe that, but if we were to just take him at his word, I think they take Rubio and Curry because they definitely wanted Rubio, and I think they maybe call Steph's bluff and they're like, hey, you have to play here anyway. I think in terms of a 1 to 3 year outlook, and we'll just cap it at 3 because, like Sam said, with his turn, that's when you would have gotten your first full year of Ricky Rubio, who is still in Spain at this point. I think, again, if we want to talk about, and perhaps this applies to all of the episodes that we do, but this one especially, like, environment really matters, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Steph was, you know, dealing with coming into the league where he had these, you know, unreliable ankles. He had injuries to both of them. You hear about teams in front offices like the Phoenix Suns having these amazing medical programs. Well, there's also a back end to that, right? Like, there's some organizations that just aren't very good at this. I wasn't able to find data from that exact year for the Timberwolves in terms of how many minutes they lost to injury, but last year's team, had the 5th highest minutes lost to injury total in the entire league, right? So, you know, I want to caution against extrapolating too much, but I think it would be odd for a front office to have a great medical staff when they drafted Steph in 2009 that would have been, as inept as they are now. And I'm only saying that because, you know, it's hard to sort of chart, you know, how much the team is responsible for players being injured. But, you know, if you have over an entire season and you're only 4 other teams that have missed more time to injury than you, like, you know, it's enough, I think, reasonably to extrapolate.
Yeah, plus I would say it's cold as hell in Minnesota, and so it's been more difficult for him to warm up his ankle.
Sure. I know nothing about science or biology outside of what they taught us from Frontiers of Science, so but I'm going to side with you.
That's
on that
a topical
one.
Columbia joke for
you
everyone.
Paid attention in that class?
I didn't. Well, I'm saying I know nothing about it outside of what I learned or I gleaned from that class, but a lot of that class was me doing.
Can I throw in a Frosai interlude? I think Miles has good points so far. I don't want to object to any Miles stuff.
Go ahead. I'm fine with a Frosai interlude.
I showed up late to my Frontiers final because it was on a Sunday and I was watching the Jets against the Falcons.
And I assume you got an A.
In the class?
Yeah.
Was this like
no.
a week 14 game?
it was week 15.
Game, right?
The Jets.
Well, that was
when
Sanchez was still.
Yeah,
good.
Sanchez threw a very long touchdown to Braylon Edwards, and then Jay Feely missed 3 field goals, and they lost 10-7.
My God.
Yeah.
So you almost missed the Final Four, a football game that ended 10-7.
So when I left, it was 7-3 Jets, and then I checked my phone after the final was over, and I had like 5 texts from people being like, oh, sorry, dude, that sucks. So I figured things didn't go so well for the Jets, and I was right.
I mean, figuring things didn't go so well for the Jets is usually the way to go.
Anyway, Miles has made some good points so far. Let's hear more of them.
Yeah, so that's one sort of minus against the Timberwolves, just in terms of how fit is concerned. It's cold. They don't have the best medical staff. Steph didn't want to be there. It's not a great way to start out any type of relationship. But on the other hand, that same 09 Wolves team was 3rd in pace, and we all know that Steph plays, like, much, much better when teams run. And Steph's win shares just as a rookie on a much better team would have been 2nd highest on that Wolves team behind Kevin Love. So it wasn't like, I mean, we talk about rookies and not having much of an impact when they first come in the league. That wasn't even necessarily Steph's situation, and he was on a much better team, right? Like, so I'm not sure that, even with him not wanting to be there, I think he still would have been an important piece of the team, especially since I think he would have been the number 3 scoring option behind Love and, you know, like maybe Al Jefferson. But in terms of that backcourt, he would have had to have anchored it. as there wasn't really another scoring option. And, you know, when we talk about the players that Minnesota would have drafted, you know, afterwards, and their next first round, if you just count the first round picks from 2010, 11, 12, and 13, that's Luke Babbitt, Wesley Johnson, stop me if can recognize any of these, Trevor Booker, Donatas Montiunas, Derek Williams, Arizona
Derek
Wildcat,
Williams.
Trey Burke, and Thunder great Andre Robertson, of course, none of whom still play for Minnesota.
Hey, I will hear no slander of Sixers' current ninth man off the bench, Trevor Booker.
Also, no, Trevor Booker,
here's
Babbitt a fun
was
fact.
A legend in, like, NBA, like, 2K11, because his three-pointers were, like, an 85 or something. So that I just always had Luke Babbitt on the floor when I played.
If you had to guess who had the most total career win shares in that group of players, your guess would be who?
Derek Williams.
I would say Andre Roberson, actually.
It's Trevor Booker.
Really?
Oh, it's Trevor Booker.
Good for you, Trev.
So, but the point is that none of those guys would have been, I guess, maybe with the exception of Wesley Johnson, maybe? Like, there's not really anybody there that would have been scoring the ball in the way that Steph, even as a rookie, would have been capable of scoring the ball. So, the first thing in Sam's argument I want to kind of push back against is that I don't think that the Timberwolves would have ever necessarily fallen out of love with Steph. I think that he would have come into the league, he would have taken a lot of shots his first couple of years. And I think, you know, it wouldn't have worked, right? Like, and it certainly wouldn't have worked the same way that the Warriors have ended up working for Steph. But, you know, he would have averaged, I think at the peak, what I have as the ceiling is in the 2012-2013 season, they win somewhere between 40 and 43 games. And I think it's reasonable to say Steph averages, you know, 20 points, 5 assists. And I don't think that's somebody that Minnesota is necessarily... I don't think they're going to look a gift horse in the mouth, especially when your next best player is Kevin Love and you know, are still trying to figure out what you're getting out of Ricky Rubio, who at this point, again, is... What is he? He's 17 at this point? 18?
So you don't think they're trying to trade Steph?
I don't. And I also don't think, if we're just going to, you know, address Sam's trade, I don't see why Oklahoma would have taken... somebody who is both 2 inches shorter than James Harden and a good 30 to 35 pounds lighter. On that Oklahoma 2012-2013 roster, there are four people, who are under 6'3 or under. One of those is Russell Westbrook. The others are Eric Maynor, Reggie Jackson, and Derek Fisher. It doesn't make sense for them to go for another small guy, knowing that they have all of those guards, and that includes none of the people who would have, you know, come over from the trade that actually happened in real life. You know, those people are going to be, you know, Jeremy Lamb and the like. So I don't see where it really makes sense, both from a front office standpoint. I don't think Sam Presti pulls the trigger there. And I also think even if he were, I mean, do y'all think that a Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry backcourt would work just in terms of touches? I mean, those guys are both, Steph is much better actually at playing off the ball, but they're also wouldn't have been running the systems that Steve Kerr or Mark Jackson were running to get Steph open off of Curry's
screens. Well, and would Westbrook ever pass the ball?
See, I'm not even as much of a Westbrook doesn't pass guy. I think you have to try really hard to force that narrative on somebody who I'm pretty sure as of right now is leading the league in assists. But still, like, I think, you know, passing is different from having a system that, like, works for Steph. And I think what was hard about doing this episode is the real life timeline is, it's like the perfect one, right? Because this Warriors team is really perfectly set up for all of the guys that they employ, but nobody does that fit more so than Steph Curry. This is the perfect scenario for him. But I think from Steph's perspective, right, this is somebody who wanted to be in New York. He wanted to be drafted by the Knicks, who would have selected, I think, 8th, I believe. So Minnesota at 6. I'm assuming Golden State takes somebody like Jordan Hill, who they were also very high on. Him, maybe even Brandon Jennings. And Steph wanted to be in New York, right? But I think also to give him credit, like, he's not Dwight Howard. He's not of the more, like, immature players in the league. I think Steph would have, like, you know, put his head down and worked hard. But, you know, again, environment is, like, really important. And I don't think on either side, I don't think this is a great fit for Steph, right? Because he there's nobody else there, certainly not in Klay Thompson or Draymond Green and those guys. And with Minnesota, like, you still have, like, gaping holes all over the place. There's not really anybody to distribute the ball, right? You got to play some type of maybe pick-and-roll or high-low game between Steph and Kevin Love, and even then, you can have defenses just do what they did to Steph in college and play zones and force the ball out of his hands. So I don't think it's a great fit for, you know, either team. And clearly, like, what Minnesota did in real life, it was clear that David Kahn or whomever was in the front office, like, wasn't capable of really surrounding him or anybody that was there with capable pieces. Like, if you're drafting, you know, guys like Luke Babbitt and Donatas Moniunis, like, you're not capable of, like, surrounding Steph with, like, MVP like level talent. And, like, that's what he needed to have succeeded.
So let's look big picture.
Yep.
Who are the winners and losers?
So I've said this a lot. This is a really hard episode, I think, mainly because a lot changes, right? We're talking about dismantling one of the biggest dynasties in the history of sports, but there's a lot, I think, that stays more or less the same. So I think the biggest winner is probably Daryl Morey and the Houston Rockets. I think, like Sam says, I think the Harden trade does still go down, and I think what that means more than anything else is that you have Houston as being, in terms of talent, one of the better teams out west. If I had to give, like, honorable mention, though, I think it's LeBron James. And this was really tricky, too, because at first I thought, well, if there's no Warriors dynasty, right, what's to say that LeBron would have left Miami, right? It doesn't make any sense. You go back and read, like, that piece that he, you know, that Lee Jenkins wrote, but it was, like, told through LeBron or whatever. And this is one of the things that's actually kind of annoying about LeBron. It's not annoying. It's great that he's, like, devoted to Akron and Northeast Ohio and whatever. But it really seemed as though he, like, just really likes Cleveland. Like, I don't get it, like, personally, but I think he would have gone back anyway. Like, read his letter.
Everybody wants to flee to the Cleave.
Yeah.
You also, read his letter, and one of his main points is, like, I'm really excited to see Anderson Barrett now. Like,
he went back to Cleveland before the Warriors got really good, also. That was summer 2014.
Yeah, I guess.
And then 2014-15 was that year the Warriors got really good and won the title.
That was the first year that Steve Kerr was there. That was the year they won 67 games. But if you also remember, like, he was going back. And I guess, again, at the time, we thought he was going back with the intention that Kevin Love also had to come too. It wasn't as though he was going. I know that's what he wrote, you know, in the Sports Illustrated piece, that he was so excited to mentor Kyrie Irving
and Andrew Wiggins and
Deion Waiters, and he was excited to reunite with Andrew. First of all, if you're LeBron James what is this, 2014, and you write publicly that one of the biggest things you're excited about is to reunite with Anderson Barrichello, either A, I'm not you know inclined to believe you, or B, again, he's really dedicated.
He's allowed to have, like, friends who are bad at basketball, right? Like,
I have friends who are bad at basketball.
Yeah.
I have friends that are bad at basketball, too. But
I'm bad at basketball.
But if you're asking me, if I'm LeBron James and I'm not bad at basketball and I'm living in South Beach being incredibly not bad at basketball, do I go back to my friends who are both bad at basketball and living in Cleveland?
I do want to.
And apparently you do if you're LeBron James.
I do want to digress for 1 second. Just got back from break. I was in Delaware where it's like 4 degrees every single day. And the only exercise I could get while I was at home was to go out and shoot jumpers. And I haven't shot jumpers in about 10 years. So I was able to get my form. My shooting form is now, it's above Markel Fultz, right? Like, I can lift
injured
my...
Injured or healthy Markel Fultz?
Above injured Markel Fultz, okay. Right? So, like, I can get the ball over my head. But it's still below Ben Simmons, so...
Friend of the podcast, Markel Fultz.
Yeah, where is it in relation to Lonzo?
Oh, my God. I can shoot better than Lonzo.
That's what's great about it. No matter what happens.
The thing is, I can't shoot from outside 5 feet, but at least my form, like, at least it looks like I have form. Well, I don't know what that guy's deal is.
I can't wait till Lonzo figures it out.
He's never going to figure it out.
Anyway, so those, I think, are the biggest winners. I couldn't bring myself to say that the Clippers are a winner because, I mean, have y'all watched the Clippers? Like, they're just, throughout their history, but just abysmal. I think the biggest loser is, like,
does this change the Donald Sterling situation at all? This is one of the things we always come back to on basketball court.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I think the Sterling thing still happens. I think the Harden trade still, like, the big stuff, the Chris Paul trade veto, some of the episodes we've done already, like, I think all that still happens, right?
Who wins the 2016 election?
I still think Trump does.
Okay.
See, because, like, and that's what I meant. Like, there's a lot that changes, but it's almost like when you have two sides, like, shooting a bunch of arrows at each other, and nobody hits anything, and you've got, like, a bunch of broken arrows and stuff all over the field, but nobody's dead.
What are you talking about?
Biggest Loser, I think. Biggest Loser is Steph, right? I mean, without what actually happened in real life. Like, Steph went from, in 2013, being, like, a freakishly good shooter that people suspected Mark Jackson was underutilizing. That was 2013. So in 5 years, he is now a unanimous Hall of Fame candidate. I think he could hang it up tomorrow, and not only is he going to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, the next day, but I think a lot of people are considering him top three shooters of all time.
I hope he tests that theory. I hope he retires tomorrow just to see if he can make the Hall of Fame. I think that'd be a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, if they're going to waive the rule that you have to wait a certain number of years, they're going to be like, oh, Steph, we got to let him in right away.
I think it depends on who you ask. If you ask Mark Jackson, no. And if you ask Mark Jackson, he's voting against Steph every time. But I don't know. You ask Bob Fitzgerald, and I think he votes him in yesterday. I think the other, and this is kind of, you know, what, sappy or whatever, other big loser is, like, everybody who watches basketball, right? Like, you don't get the 73-win season. You don't get, I mean, like, just bring up some of Steph's stats. Like, I think maybe his best year, you could argue, was that 2015-2016 year, you know, the 73-win season, of course. Right. But 30.1 points a game. He also led the league in scoring and steals that year. 6.7 assists, led the league in free throw shooting too. Shot 63% effective field goal percentage, including this is nuts, including 45% from three. I mean, he was just lights out without the system around him. And, you know, in Minnesota, that just doesn't happen. I think he's a lot more someone like. Honestly, I think Steph ends up maybe looking more like Brandon Roy in terms of somebody who's like, wow, this is someone who's really, really talented offensively, but because of injuries, which I think would have persisted in Minnesota, and because he just didn't really have the team that he has around him now, I think he wouldn't have panned out.
Well, and also, so if we don't get that transcendent Steph season, we don't also get that transcendent playoffs, which was probably, you know, obviously Sam not happy with the way it turned out, but from a neutral perspective,
that was
probably the best.
I mentioned this in mind. That was an all-time season. Like, right. I'm not a huge NBA regular season guy, but the last two regular seasons have just been incredible. Especially just like watching the Warriors every night going for 73. The Spurs were great that year too. There was all the intrigue with the Thunder and everything going on in the East also, and the playoffs were great. Steph had that crazy moment against the Blazers where he came back and he hit the threes and everything. We don't get me watching him hit the half-court shot against the Thunder from a Krispy Kreme in DuPont Circle. Just we miss out on a lot.
Hey, shout out to the Krispy Kreme in DuPont Circle.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about your stories about sporting futility is how specific the locations are. Like, you know, every single one of them, I can imagine you sad in, like, this specific spot, right? Like, you sad in your dorm. You sad in DuPont Circle.
I hung out with Miles the next day at the Air and Space Museum.
It's usually a place where everyone else is, like, relatively happy, right? Like, it's usually, like, a bar.
Like, everyone's at the DuPont. Everyone's at the DuPont Circle.
Or, like, getting donuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like, at the museum. Everyone's enjoying. But here's, you know, Sam grumbling.
No. It was really embarrassing, too, because, like, I was watching on my phone. And I was there with Ariel, and she was connecting with some high school friends. And he hit the half-court shot, and I was just like, no! And then everyone else in the Krispy Kreme looks at me, and I was like, it's fine, it's fine. I put my phone away. But I was heartbroken.
Oh, my God.
I think other ancillary effects as I wrap this up, and I think this here is where I will say that another potential winner in this may be unlikely, is DeMar DeRozan. Reason I say that is because I think there's probably a good chance that the kind of small ball pace and space era of basketball that we've kind of been revived into right now probably doesn't happen without not the 67 win Warriors team, but the one right before it. I think you know, after the 7 seconds or less Suns with D'Antoni in the mid-2000s, like, we kind of, I don't think necessarily went away from it. I think you still had teams trending towards that. But the way that it exploded once the Warriors got good, I don't think would have happened, right? So I think you would have had And when I say, you know, benefit, like, I'm talking about in terms of esteem. Like, even looking at this current season, like, DeMar DeRozan is tearing it up, right? But because he's somebody that shoots a lot of mid-range jumpers, takes a lot of dribbles, is not, like, an economics darling. He's not going to be, you know, highlighted at the Sloan Conference or analytics or whatever.
I do like the concept of him not being an economics darling, like he's not being published in the latest like econ textbook.
Wait, I think this is a first. We need to give Miles a shout out. This is the first time that DeMar DeRozan, I think, has been a winner in basketball court because of something else that happened in the NBA timeline.
Yeah, you know, I try to you know cover all NBA, and I feel like sometimes because of my bias, I maybe don't give teams like the Raptors some shout-outs. But I think DeMar DeRozan...
And your bias being that you hate Canadians.
No, my bias being that I hate teams that are clearly better than the Wizards, but when the game actually happens, you're like, the Wizards can beat this team. Like, we just got to put it together. And then, of course, they don't beat them. And then I, like Sam, am, you know, walking around West Oakland really sad about everything.
All right.
Anyway.
You done?
Almost. The last thing I'll say, and this is where there's more overlap, is that Oklahoma, like, has to win at least one title in this one after 2012, right? If there's no Warriors juggernaut, and you're left with the Clippers, a Rockets team that I still think is pretty good, right? I think you still get MVP caliber James Harden, but I don't think that, again, because there's no Warriors and there's no impetus to chase the death lineup, for example, I don't think you have the Rockets putting up 130 points a night or whatever. And if you have those teams and the Spurs, you never can never count the Spurs. But even that, like, you're talking about still Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and some other players. They figure it out. They have to. Because, again, the only timeline in which they don't is the one that actually happened. But, yeah, so I think ultimately this is something that doesn't really benefit Steph at all. I think the Wolves make out better than him, but even they like are back to the drawing board in 2011-2012. Everyone should be grateful that things didn't happen this way, because it would have been bad for basically everybody.
That's the spirit. All right, good job, gang. Credits.
Wait, Miles, are you arguing that real life is the better timeline?
This is the only... That's why, again, not to beat a dead horse, but this really was very difficult, because this is the only timeline where I'm like, wow, I'm actually glad. This is me, 2018, is
New Year,
January
New Me.
9th, right? Yeah, this is the best timeline for what we're talking about right now. You know, the Nazism and white supremacy and the rise of the alt-right notwithstanding. This is still, I think, better, if you're Steph.
Yeah, how does this affect noted alt-right member Andrew Bogut, I wonder?
Oh, he is. If you think he didn't like the players in their flashy bling-bling
before, oh, wait,
can I
respond to an earlier point, now that you brought up Andrew Bogut?
Quickly.
When you said your favorite 3-1 meme, when Andrew Bogut had some Twitter rant about social justice warriors.
Yeah, that's great.
And some guy responded, at least the social justice warriors didn't blow a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. I just want to put that back out there. Go on.
I don't know why. That came across my Twitter like 2 days ago. And I don't understand
why. It's universally
really
good.
Yeah.
All right. So credit to both of you for coming back after a long hiatus. I know you guys were rusty. I know it took us a while to put this episode together. But we're back. It's January. Here's some things I like. This will be really quick. Actually, you know what? I'm just going to pick a winner. So what it comes down to for me is that Sam's final point was that Durant going to the Warriors breaks a Lil B curse, which then unleashes a wave of rotten energy that leads all the way to the Patriots winning the Super Bowl. And Miles' final point was DeMar DeRozan would be slightly more appreciated.
And so,
for that reason, the first basketball court champion of 2018 is Sam Tidings.
I can live with that.
Thank you. This was, as every episode where I get to take away the Warriors dynasty is a good episode, regardless of whether or not I win.
Did you have a final number for how many titles the Thunder win in this one?
Is it two, right?
I think I said no fewer than two, possibly as many as four.
Fewer than two. Oh, well. I mean, they could have won eight in a row, for God's sake.
You never know.
You never know.
Also, be sure to watch the Olympics in February. on not just NBC,
to the Olympics,
not just NBC, but the entire NBC family of networks will be carrying some form of the Olympics.
Have you gotten them to pay for like a sponsorship on this? Because I'm not sure if we can just. I might have to cut all this out.
I'd also like to thank Chips Ahoy, Chewy, because
Chewy the like Pat subscription.
No, it's called. Let me look. Chips Ahoy soft and yummy chewy cookies. Okay. They're delicious.
And on this end, we'd like to shout out Firestone Walker Brewing Company for making the beer that Miles and I drank during this episode. The beer is called 805, so drink that if it's near you.
I have shout outs, but none of them are appropriate.
So. That's the spirit. All right, so you know the deal. Let's see if I remember the deal. Okay, so you can follow us on Twitter at B-Ball Court Pod. Is that right?
That is correct.
Oh, thank God. You can check us out online at Basketball Court Podcast. Go rate and review on iTunes because clearly it's very important that we get iTunes, get up the iTunes charts.
My New Year's resolution is this will be more streamlined in 2018. So you can hold me to that in the new year.
I think our only iTunes reviews are from Ronak and Steven.
Hey, don't pull back the curtain, man. Don't pull back the curtain. Hey, if you go fill out a review. We'll probably immediately know who you are. Right. So
yeah, that's Bitcoin aficionado Ronak to you.
Oh yeah, and you can send us Bitcoins too if you really like the show.
Yeah, please do. We can set up a Patreon. Yeah,
if you send if you send us one Bitcoin, we will literally do whatever you say. I think that's fair.
Yeah, totally fair. If you send us one Bitcoin, we'll name the show after you.
Bitcoin Court is brought to you by
Chips Ahoy.
Donors like you.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Congratulations, Sam, on your victory, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I'm glad to start the 2018 season off the right way.
And Miles, good to see you again. I'm excited. Tough loss, but get him next time.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's fine. We don't have to talk about it. But I'm excited to be here and to do the next episode because I don't think Sam's win streak will last that long.
All right. Good smack talk to wrap it up. For Sam and Miles, I'm Peter. This has been Basketball Court, and court is adjourned. So don't stop your recording yet.
Okay.
I'm going to do 3-2-1 stop again just to make sure the ends sync up. And I know you suck at this, but let's try anyway.
Okay.
3-2-1
stop.
Go. Yeah, okay. Did it work? No, it really didn't.